We're holding on Lamadalid Omud Beis, about 12 lines from the bottom. Yeah, 12 lines from the bottom. We think yesterday our Mishnah had said that dinim mamonos, you have to begin them by day, but you can finish off and give the verdict by night. We said Reb Meir disagrees with that, and Reb Meir says that even the Gemara din of dinim mamonos has to be by day. Din nefashos, as we're going to go on to say shortly, everybody agrees have to be completed by day. The verdict has to be given by day as well. So we said that the Chachamim say that there are two. The Chachamim point out that there are two psukim, one of which so Rava had pointed out. On the one hand, you have a pasuk that says they judge the people at all times, implying day or night. On the other hand, we have a pasuk that says on the day that a person bequeaths his inheritance to his children, implying that nachlos, which are one type of dinim mamonos, take place only by day. So therefore, so Rava had said, according to the Chachamim, it means that one of them is talking about the beginning of the din, and the other is talking about the Gemar din. So now, on the other hand, again, we said Reb Meir had pointed out he holds there's a hekesh between dinim mamonos and the dinim of tzaras, and we established therefore, according to him, just like tzaras has to be the whole thing has to be done by day, the same way dinim mamonos, the whole thing has to be done by day. The only thing is, we said that unlike tzaras, where you can't see it at all times of day and it can't be on a cloudy day, etc., by dinim mamonos you don't need that. It does have to be by day, but it's fine if the weather is not cooperative, etc. So the Gemara says, and the last thing we did, so that was the last thing we dealt with, is what Reb Meir does with the pasuk that says b'chol eis. He says it doesn't mean by night, it means on cloudy days or things like that. So the Gemara continues, Reb Meir hai b'yem hanchivei es bon of my oven lay. What is Reb Meir doing with the pasuk that says on the day that he bequeaths his Yerusha to his children, which implies that takes place only by day? So the answer is he uses it to teach us this, that Rabbi Bar Chanina taught a braisa in front of Rabbi Nachman, that this pasuk, that it will be on the day that a person bequeaths to his children, where the pasuk continues, then he has to give the double portion to the bechor. So we learn from the word b'yoyim, only by day are you able to give out nachlos. Mapil literally means to make full, because many times when you're doing a nachla, you do it using a girdle, the same way as when they first came into Eretz Yisrael, they use a girdle to determine what shevet, what gets what territory. The same way, when you have a bunch of yorshim, very often you'll do something. We learned about this in Bava Basra. Very often you'll do a girdle to determine which of the children will get which section of the nachla. So therefore, so it uses the word mapil, literally meaning to make fall, because that's often how you do it in terms of girdolas falling. Anyway, so the Braisa explains nachlos, only by day are you able to give out nachlos, but not by night, because in other words, because the pasuk didn't have to say the word beyoyim otherwise. Omalei, but Rabbi Nachman says, what does that braisa that you're quoting mean? Elamayata, by your logic, if you're saying that nachlis can't be bequeathed by night, only by day, by your logic, are you telling me that only if a person dies during the daytime, then his children yarshin him? Whereas if he passes away by night, his children don't yarshin him? Obviously not. Maybe what you mean, maybe your braisa that distinguishes between day and night is not talking about the actual Yerusha itself. Of course, that's going to happen anytime the person passes away. Maybe it means the din of nachlus, meaning that if the person himself, before he passes away, gives out a tzavah, gives out instructions while he's alive, then if he does it by day, then it's considered a din, and you don't need dayonim to ratify it. As opposed to by night, then you would need dayonim, because then the ones who heard it are going to be only edim. So Tursfus points out, by the way, that now we learned over and over in Bava Basra the concept that when a Shchiv Merah says something, it's considered as though written and signed. So we are going to still draw this distinction that you have between day and night. But Tursfus points out that whole point about Divrei Shchiv Merah itself is only Dirabanan. Here we're dealing with the meaning of a pasuk. Therefore, we have to say the pasuk is distinguishing whether a kinyan was made or not. The concept that a kinyan would create a would create a transfer of ownership would create that you have that what he said is definitive. That concept itself is Daraisa, but we can still distinguish within that itself whether he did it by day, where it's possible to do a din of dinim mominis by day versus by night. Namely, and Tanya, as we learn in another Braisa, the pasuk says Vahoisel of Neisu Chukas Mishpat, after the Torah goes through in Parshas Pinchas, after it goes through all the details of who of the order of Yerusha that we learned about in Bava Basra. First comes a person's sons, and if he doesn't have any sons or their descendants, then his daughters, no daughters or their descendants, then we learned in Bava Basra, it goes to his father, which it doesn't say explicitly in the pasuk, then to his father's other sons, etc. And we learned in Bava Basra and at the beginning of the eighth parak, the whole chain over there. So, and the pasuk finishes off after it goes through all those details. It says, "V'hoisel of Neisur l'chukas mishpat." This, all of this, shall be for the Jewish people as a chukah of mishpat. Chukah and mishpat, of course, as we know, are both terms that are used for mitzvahs. More specifically, chukah means a mitzvah that we don't understand the reason. Fine, but the point is, in other words, that chukas mishpat means, in other words, that all of this is a mishpat. All of this is a din in dini mominis. Which means, therefore, order kol ha-parsha kol lias din. So we learn from that the entire parsha is being completed and summarized. The word order Rashi translates over here, and Rashbam translates similarly in Bava Basra. And nistaima, it's complete. It ends off. After having given all those details, the pasuk is ending off and telling us kol ha-parsha kol, that entire parsha lias din, that it's considered in a certain sense a din, as in a fixed judgment, meaning. Which means like the way Rabbi Yehuda explains in the name of Rav. If three people come to visit a sick person, and he gives them instructions of what he wants to do with his nechosim, Rotsu Kosvin, if they want, they can just write it down as though they were Dayanim, and then the Yosh, as though they were Edim rather, and then the Yoshim will take that document to Beis Din, and Beis Din will supervise the actual distribution of the Nechosim. Rotsu Oisin Din, if they want, they themselves can be the Dayanim. Since there are three of them, then as we learned in Or Masechta many times, three Dayanim, you need three in order to be a Beis Din. So the three of them can choose to be a Beis Din, and therefore we're saying that what they're saying is going to be binding based on what the Chola, based on what the Shchiv Merah told them. On the other hand, Shnayim, but Rav Yehuda continues, if only two of them came to visit Kosvin Vein Osin Din, then they can only write it as Edim. They can't actually make the din because they can't actually make the din because there were only two of them, and two are not enough to be a Beis Din. In fact, the Yad Rama points out it would mean even that even if a third person joins together with them, they can't say, "Well, now we're three. Now we can be a Beis Din," because to begin with, we already became Edim. And the Gemara explains, "Ein Ed Nasa Dayan." The Gemara explains in various places, an Ed cannot, well, a person who was an Ed cannot become a Dayan. So therefore, they can't now become Dayanim even when a third one joins up with them. The point is, so we have that din. Now that doesn't distinguish between day and night, but ve'omer of chista. But Rav Chista further explains on that point. Loishanu el bayoyim. That whole distinction between two or three of them is only if they visited him by day. Ava balayla. But if they visited him by night, and by night again you can't do dinei Torah, then even if there's three of them, kosvin vein osin din, then they can only write it. They cannot execute the judgment. Mishum dehavalahu edim, because at that point they become edim. And as we just said, ve'ein ed nasa dayan. When they themselves are edim, they themselves can't turn around and become dayanim about it. So therefore, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Bar Chanina, is that what your braisa means? Your braisa that's distinguishing, that you're quoting, that distinguishes between day and night, is it trying to make that same distinction that Rav Chista made explicit? That here you have a case where the visitors themselves can be dayanim, but only if there's three of them and only if it's by day. And Rabbi Bachanan says, "Ein hachi kamina." Yes, actually, that is exactly what that braisa that I quoted means. You were wondering, does the braisa mean to imply that there's a difference when the person dies in terms of what happens with the nachla? Of course not. No, it's this distinction as far as whether the people that visit, what their role can be as edim or as dayanim. So the point is, Reb Meir is going to use the words, is going to use the. Is going to use the words. He agrees with that point, and therefore he's going to say that that's what we learn from that pasuk, and therefore he doesn't have it available to learn that in general dinim mamonos have to be begun by day. He says all dinim mamonos have to be begun by day because of the hekesh that we learned about yesterday. So therefore he uses this pasuk specifically for this point about when it comes to nachlois, about what they can do in terms of edim versus dayanim. Tosfos refers over here to something they talked about in detail in the first parak, where sometimes you have the people who observe something, are they necessarily considered edim on it or not? And we talked about over there that there's a distinction whether they meant to give edus or whether not, because we talked about, for example, you can have, for example, brothers or other relatives who are part of a crowd that observe something. If we don't have a way of distinguishing which ones are edim and which ones are not, then the edus is going to be possible because, as we've learned, brothers or other relatives are possible to be edim. So we talked about then when we learned this on Daf Tes that, for example, a practical nafkamina of that we have all the times by weddings is that the Rav, the Masada Kedushin, will announce that the following two people are the two Edim to the exclusion of all others, meaning, in other words, that we're saying explicitly that nobody else who is here should be considered an aid. So that way, even if it turns out that other people there are relatives, which obviously there's going to be, or Psulei Eders, then they don't impinge on it because only the two that we designated, and the Rav has, of course, made sure in advance that those two are not Psulim and not relatives, those two will be the Edim. So Tosfos earlier in the Masechta discusses that in light of our Gemara over here. Where we're saying the same kind of thing. In other words, the very fact that they saw it doesn't automatically make them edim. They can have in mind that they don't plan to be edim; they plan to be dayanim, and we're saying that it does work. Next, the Mishnah had said, Dini Nefoshes Dunin by Yoim V'chola. We said that Dini Nefoshes, we have to both judge by day. The discussion, the maso matan, has to be by day, and we said the verdict has to be given by day as well. And we said further, as we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara, that if the verdict is going to be guilty, they have to hold it over for the next day. So Menahani Mili, where do we know that from? That no part of Dini Nefoshes can take place by night. Because the pasuk says, the pasuk describes how you have the what happened when the Jewish people got involved with Bnos Midian at the end of Parshas Balak. And the pasuk says that Hashem tells Moshe, take all of the leaders of the people, and the pasuk says, hang them up before Hashem in front of the sun. Now, it doesn't mean when we're saying take all the leaders of the people and hang them, it doesn't mean to hang the leaders of the people. I mean, there's a drasha about it because, you know, the leaders are responsible for what happens. But the Poshet Pshat is, in other words, that the leaders are going to be the ones who are going to be supervising, who are going to be judging the Dini Nefoshes in this case, and hanging those who are chayev that. By the way, hanging, of course, is not one of the Dalet Mitzvos based in, but later on in the sixth perek of our Masechta, we're going to talk about how there are certain people who, after they're given skill, afterwards their body is hanged for a short while, and that's what we're talking about over here. Anyway, the point that it says neged hashomesh, in front of the sun, means that it has to be by daytime. So we see that the verdict itself has to be done by day. Rashi mentions on the pasuk of drosha that it means also that the ananei covered would move aside, and the sun would shine on the guilty people, and that way they'd know who's guilty, so they could execute them. Okay, but the point is, in other words, that all of the executions and punishments had to happen by day. Now the pasuk says vahoika. How do we know what the word vahoika means anyway? How do we know that the word hoika means hanging? So you have here, we have to go to a different story in Tanakh. You have in Sefer Shmuel, you have a story where there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael for 3 years, and David finds out from Hashem, from the Urim, through the Urim V'Tumim, that it's because Shaul had mistreated the Givonim. When he wiped out Novir HaKohanim, the Givonim suffered from it also. Kitzur HaMaaseh, anyway, the Psukim describe, David goes to talk to the Givonim, and they tell him, we want blood. The only way we're going to be appeased is you have to take seven members of Shaul's family and hang them, and then we'll be willing to be moichel you. The Gemara tells the more details of the story in Yevamos. David said these are cruel people. We don't ever want them to intermarry into the Jewish people. Anyway, the Pasuk says that they say, V'hoikanum Hashem, we will hang them up in front of Hashem, Begivas Shaul, Bechir Hashem, in the hill where Shaul, the chosen of Hashem, had his capital. So we see, in other words, that the so we see the same word v'hoika. Here we have v'hoikanum. We will hoika them. Now, how do we know from that pasuk what hoika is? Uchtiv. The pasuk continues further on after the seven people had been executed, but two of them, the pasuk describes, were the sons of Rizpah bas Aya, who was a pilegesh of Shaul. And the pasuk says, "Vatikach Rizpah bas Aya as a sack. She took a sack, vatateu lor latsur, and she leaned it against a rock." Mitchilas, actually, is how it says in the pasuk, from the beginning of the harvest. What happened is Rashi explains on the Psukim over there, based on other Gemaras, that the seven of them had been hanged and been killed and hanged at the beginning on Chol Hamoed Pesach, which is the beginning of the harvest season. Now, normally the bodies are supposed to be buried on the same day, as we're going to learn later on in our Masechta. However, in this case, the Gemara explains in Yevamos that they left the bodies unburied for several months in order to make a great Kiddush Hashem. The whole thing to begin with had been a Chilul Hashem, that the way that Shaul had not treated the Givonim right. Now, instead, it made a Kiddush Hashem because people would pass by and ask what happened, and they would be told, here, these are members of the royal family, and they were killed because they harmed, because Shaul had harmed low-class Geirim. Keep in mind, the Givonim themselves had originally gotten their way into the Jewish people by trickery, by pretending that they're from some foreign, faraway nation, and therefore gotten Yeshua and the Skenim to make a treaty with them. So they're like the lowest of the low among Geirim, and nevertheless, we still respect them to that extent, and Hashem still stood up for their honor to that extent, that when they were angry, then Hashem caused a famine. The point is, in other words, that and the pasuk describes how she took the sackcloth and used it to help protect the bodies from the from being eaten by birds of prey or wild animals or whatever. So we see the bodies are exposed over there, and where would that be? What kind of punishment would do that? If it was one of the Dalad Mrs. based in, the bodies wouldn't still be sitting there all that time. Therefore, hikanum means hanging, where indeed the bodies are left outdoors for a period of time. So therefore, we see that the word vahoika means to hang. Therefore, now applying that back to the pasuk in Parshas Balak means that Hashem is telling Moshe take the leaders and have them set up bate dinim and judge the people who are guilty of worshiping Avodah Zarah in connection with the girls of Moab and Midian, and hang those people. And then the plague will be over. So we see, but since it says Neged HaShemesh, in front of the sun, then we see from that that such a thing has to take place davka by day. So, Uchtiv, now let's analyze further the pasuk. It says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, kachas kol roshei ha'am." Hashem tells Moshe, "Take all the leaders of the people." And the pasuk continues that hoika them. So, ima am chotu roshei am machotu. On the face of it, it makes it sound as though we're supposed to hang the leaders. But why should we do that? What do the leaders do wrong? Amr of Yehuda, Amr Rav, Amr Lo Yakadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe means Hashem is telling Moshe, not that the leaders are to be hanged. Okay, again, there's a drasha about it along the lines of that we're saying the leaders are always held responsible for what the people do. But at least in the pshat of the Gemara, means Amr Lo Yakadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Chalak Lahen Bote Dinim. Hashem is telling Moshe, divide up and have many bote dinim who are going to judge the people. There are many people who were involved in this whole thing, who got involved with Bnos Midian. So therefore, so Hashem is telling Moshe, take all the leaders of the people, meaning set up a bunch of small bote dinim where they're going to judge the people individually. And then v'hoika, and then again, give them skila and give them hanging because they got involved with the girls from Moav and Midian, and because they got involved with Avodah Zarah. So I'm going to ask my timer, why is Moshe being told to Davka have so many to have so many bota dinim for the purpose? Are you going to say it's a practical matter because are you going to say it's a practical matter because you can't judge two dinin nefashos on one day? There's a rule that one beis din cannot judge two dinin nefashos on one day. But doesn't Rav Chista say loishana el b'shtei misses? That's true, but that applies only when the two people who are being judged are going to be getting two different misses. Meaning, Rashi says, because after all, we need, as we've been learning so far, the members of the Beis Din have to put in a lot of effort in order to find reasons to exonerate the person. If we have two different misses, two completely different Averis and two different misses, then it's going to be hard for them to focus on one after the other, so they may not focus thoroughly on each one to try to find every possible reason to exonerate him. So that's only when it's two misses Beis Din. Avo b'misa achas donin. But if it's the same missa, then they could. Meaning, if it's one aveda and one missa, then they could. Here, everybody who's being judged and punished is for the same reason, because they worship Avodah Zarah. So what would be the problem if you have one Beis Din were to have all the defendants in front of them and then discuss it all among themselves and then say Yankel and Beryl and then Mendel and whatever, all of you are chayav missa. What would be the problem with that? Ella, no. The reason why they had to have separate bata dinim for a separate beis din for each person is Kadesh Yoshev Charon Af Yisrael, because the pasuk describes that Hashem was angry at the Jewish people and a plague had broken out. So they wanted that to end as fast as possible. When Hashem sees that everybody is busy with it, then Hashem will realize that then so will so to speak realize that there was that we should calm down and not punish the Jewish people at large for what these people did. Meaning, in other words, let's say you only have Moshe's Beis Din, the Beis Din of the Sanhedrin of 70 or 71 is judging and punishing the guilty parties, and everybody else is kind of sitting on the side, then that would, so to speak, motivate Hashem to say, well, you know what, listen, so obviously everybody else doesn't care, so therefore they deserve punishment because they know what's going on and they're not Moshe. When instead you have those many smaller bata dinim, every group of 23 is getting together to judge, then that shows Hashem, you know what, everybody is taking this seriously, and we want to get these people punished as fast as possible, and that causes Hashem to reciprocate and to take away the plague. The point, though, is, again, that was a side point, but the point is that we see that all of this had to be davka by day, neged hashamash. So from that we learn that dinim nefoshes have to davka be done by day. Tosfos points out, by the way, based on a Tesefta, actually, that even when it's that what you need is, in order for a Beis Din to be able to judge two people on the same day, it has to be not only it's the same Misa, it has to be not only it's the same Aveda, but the same Misa, meaning, in other words, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, you have a case where a You have a case of a Bas Koyen who's Mizana, where the din is under certain circumstances, she gets Srefa. We're going to learn later on Daf Nun Aleph about the details of that. A Bas Koyen, whereas the boil would get Chenek, as usually happens with an Eishes Ish. The default punishment for a Noyef and an Ephes is Chenek. Sometimes there's an upgrade, so to speak, and sometimes instead there's Srefa and Skila, or Skila, as we'll learn later on in the Masechta, the details. So now you have a case of a Bas Koyen, she gets Srefa. The man she was with gets chenek, even though it's the same Avera, and they were both obviously involved in it together, nevertheless, Beis Din has to judge them separately because there are different misses involved. As opposed to, for example, if it had been a regular case of Eishes Ish, where both of them are getting chenek, then we're saying Beis Din could judge them both together. And similarly, we're saying over here, if it had been, let's say, a matter of a bunch of people worshipping Avodah Zarah, then the Beis Din could judge them one after the other, all on the same day.
Or all together, also.
Or all together, yeah. Okay. Okay. Next, we said another distinction between dinim mominus and dinim nefashos. Dinim mominus, gomrin b'yayim cholo. We said dinim mominus, you can give the final verdict on that same day, as opposed to dinim nefashos. If the verdict is going to be l'choiv, then you can't then you can't do it that day. Then you have to wait for the next day. So the Gemara says, Minohani Mili, where do we know that from? You have a pasuk in Yeshaya. He says about Yerushalayim, Mishpat. It used to be full of judgment. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara mentions an interesting point. There were 481 Bate Dinim in Yerushalayim at the time, which is the gematria of the word Malayasi. It was a huge city that had millions of people in it, so they needed a lot of Bate Dinim. Anyway, Malayasi Mishpat, Yerushalayim had been full of justice. Tzedek Yolin Ba. Justice would stay overnight in it, but after Meratzchem, and now there are murderers. So, in other words, the Pasuk is saying the Yeshaya is telling them, you used to do the right thing. You used to do tzedek yolin bo. You used to do the right thing. When it comes to dinin nefashos, you would wait until the next day to decide the verdict. Now you're not doing that anymore. So, therefore, he's saying you're being like Meratzchem, you're being murderers because you're not taking the time to think over the case carefully enough and see whether the person is taka chayiv misa. So you see from that they're supposed to leave over the verdict for the next day, and therefore and in fact the Yad Ramah adds also, we know we're talking about dinin nefashos because the previous pasuk says Yedeichem damim maleu, the Navi criticizes them and says your hands are full of blood, so we know that we're talking about dinin nefashos over here. Rava says mehacha. You have a different pasuk a few pasukim earlier where Yeshaya also says, he says ashru chomites. Now ashru means strengthen. Chomites, we're understanding, mean no, well the word chomites means acid, but not acid, but whatever it means, means vinegar. But chomites means the one who has been wronged. The one who the a chomitz, another meaning of chomitz would be a gazlan. So chomitz would be the one who has been nigzal, the one from whom the gazlan has stolen. So Rava is darshaning the pasuk differently. He's darshaning the word chomitz not to mean the one who has been wronged, but rather meloshen chomitz. Meloshen, you think about it, you leave dough long enough, it becomes chomitz. So therefore, Rava is darshaning the word chomitz in that sense. Ashru, strengthen, and compliment the dayan, that ashru dayan shemachametz dinoi, give praise to and strengthen the dayan who delays, who's machametz the din, meaning who leaves it overnight in order to rethink it over, to rethink it over, and decide whether, in fact, his original thought that the person is guilty is correct, or whether maybe afterward he can find reasons to exonerate him. So the Gemara says v'idach. Now Rav Chanina, why doesn't he? Why? What does he have against that pasuk? That instead he's going to learn the din from. That instead he's going to learn the din from the pasuk tzedek yolin bava atamaratzchim. The answer is because he holds ashru chometz v'loy chometz. He says the word chometz over there has nothing to do with delaying the din. That has to do rather with the idea. Again, you have the chometz, which is the gazlan, and you have the chometz, which is the nigzol. So we learn from that the pasuk is saying strengthen the nigzol, not the goizol. What does that mean? So Rashi explains like this. In Bava Kamma, the Gemara explains, you have a din Torah between two people. You have a plaintiff who's coming to Beis Din with a complaint. This person took money that belongs to me or whatever. And then you have the other person, you have the defendant, the nitba. So now, imagine, for example, you have Rashi describes two people come to Beis Din then. Reuven says, listen, Shimon, I lent you money. You never paid back. Where is my money? Shimon counterclaims and says, you know what? I gave you a mashkin for it, and you've damaged that mashkin. So now you've lost the mashkin or whatever. So the mashkin should counteract then. You lent me $100. I gave you a mashkin of $100. Maybe even I gave you a mashkin that's more than $100. So therefore, I don't owe you anything, or if anything, maybe you owe me something. Which case does Beis Din deal with first? So first, Rashi says Beis Din is going to deal with the basic claim. Reuven is saying that Shimon owes him money. We're going to say, listen, Shimon, do you have any proof that you paid it off, or that you didn't let borrow the money or whatever? And if not, then pay up. Afterwards, we'll deal with this matter with the mashkin. So we learn from that. Ashru chomotz, we say the pasuk is saying, strengthen and give precedence to the din of the chomotz, the one who's claiming that he's been wronged, namely Reuven, who's saying, I lent you money and you haven't paid it back, rather than the chomotz, rather than dealing first with Shimon with his counter claim.
Also, I was this way, how the Seder. First, you let them learn on.
Right, so Tosfos actually deals in some detail with what the chiddush of it is, and then what the situation is. I mean, we're not going to be matriach based in twice, really. We're not going to say that first he's going to make him pay, and then later on we're going to have to come to a new din Torah in order to deal with the matter of the mashkin. So fine. Here we're talking about that. Here maybe Tosfos points out the loiver is not doesn't really have as much of a substantial claim. He's basically just saying lishtamuti. He's just trying to say something to sort of to push off or to get out of paying it. So we're not going to deal with that. But then Tosfos also discusses a little more about that. Then Tosfos brings a couple of other explanations. One of them is. It doesn't mean as far as dealing with the entire case first. It just means whose edim do we listen to first? So let's say, for example, that let's say, for example, in our scenario over here that Rashi's describing, first we're gonna listen to Reuven's edim, who says you owe me the money. Afterwards, Shimon has a counterclaim. Yeah, but I gave you a mashkin. Fine, we'll listen to Shimon's edim next. The point is that we have to do it in that order, even if that means, for example, Tosfos says, even if let's say we're concerned that that Shimon's edim are going to be going off to Medina Sayyam. We're going to die soon or whatever. Nevertheless, we learn from the pasuk we have to listen to Reuven's edim first. But then Tosfos doesn't really like that explanation. After all, if it is an emergency like that, maybe we should listen to them first. And then another case Tosfos says is you can have where it's not a matter of a loan, for example. It's rather, for example, Reuven is saying, Shimon, you injured me, and therefore you're chayav nezek tzar, etc. And Shimon says, I have other counterclaims against you, so then we're gonna take care of Reuven's case first. He said, Reuven Shimon's saying, I have Edim, on the other hand, that I have other claims against you that counteract that. So we're gonna say we're first gonna deal with Reuven's case. That's another example of Ashru Chometz. Different other Mefoshim talk about different other possible cases, different other exact scenarios where we're gonna say that we deal with one versus the other. The point is, in other words, that the point is, and by the way, actually, the Yad Rama points out the word chomoitz literally means the one who squeezes or the one who grabs. So therefore, again, it means the one who's who's saying that we're accusing somebody that he took money from somebody else or unlawfully, and we're saying the pasuk is saying ashru chomoitz. We're saying that we're saying so we're saying the chomoitz means chomutz. Means the one from whom it was grabbed, and we're going to say we're going to deal with his case first. Anyway, so the point is, Reb Chanina is learning that din from this pasuk, Ashru Chometz v'loy Chometz. So don't give precedence to the Chometz, to the one who is being accused of grabbing from somebody else. Rather deal with the one who claims that he's been wronged first. And in fact, the Baal HaMor says, Taka, an explanation along the lines of one of the answers of Tosfos, that it just means that Beis Din first investigates Reuven's claim before they start investigating Shimon's claim, but they don't actually do them as two separate dinei Torah, because like Tosfos says, why bother Beis Din twice? The Idoch. Now, what about Rava? Hai Malayasi Mishpat my Avadlay. What is he doing with the Pasuk about that Yerushalayim used to be full of justice and it used to be Tzedek Yolinbah? They used to leave over the judgment overnight. So, what does he do with that Pasuk since instead he's learning the concept that we have to leave over the judgment we have a Din Nefashos for the next day? He learns from the words Ashru Chometz. So the answer is Kedirabalazer Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. He uses the pasuk Malayasi Mishpat, the pasuk about Tzedek Yolin Ba. He uses it to teach us what Rabbi Lazer says in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. The Omer Rabbi Lazer Omer Rabbi Yitzchak called Tainis Shemalinin Baras Hatzedaka. Whenever there's a Tainis Tzibur, for example, for rain or what have you, and they leave over the Tzedaka overnight. Now, usually what they would do is when it comes to a tiny sibber, they would give extra amounts of tzedakah because in particular, the poor people would be relying on that tzedakah to use to have food to break their fast. So now, if instead they leave over and they give that tzedakah only the next day, so ke'ilu shofech damim, then it's as if they're spilling blood. Shenema, malayasi mishpat tzedek v'goymer, because the pasuk is saying, because they left over the tzedek for overnight, va'ata meratzchem, then now they're considered murderers because they didn't give it today. So Rava says that's what the pasuk means. Nothing to do with leaving over the verdict for the next day. We're talking about leaving. We're talking about which is the right thing to do, but rather we're talking about leaving over the tzedakah that should have been given on the fast day, and instead giving it the next day. And we're saying that's the wrong thing to do. But the Gemara points out v'hani mili rift of a tam, v'hani mili rift of a tamri. Now that would only apply as far as giving them bread or giving them dates. That's ready to eat food, and they expected to break their fast on that. Alva bezuzi, but if we're talking about giving them money for tzedakah, chiti v'sairi, or wheat and barley, those are all not things that they can eat right away. The money they're going to need to use to buy food, the wheat or the barley they're going to need to grind and whatever and make into bread. Lusfon ba, there's no problem with that if we leave that over for the next day and hand that out to the Aniyim the next day. They weren't relying on that. They weren't relying on that to break their fast. So therefore, there's no problem if the Gaboy Tzedakah in town give that to the Aniyim the next day.
We know that we're not relying on that
because practically speaking, if it's money, they can't. They're not going to be able to go shop by night. Wheat and barley, they're not going to eat it raw. They're going to grind it up and make it into flour.
Right, but they could do an hour.
It still takes time. The point is that they're not expecting to have it today to break their fast on, as opposed to ready-made bread or dates or things like that. Ready-made food they were expecting to have, yeah. Okay, fine. Now, the Mishnah continued, because we have to leave over the verdict, if it's a guilty verdict with Dinin HaFashas, we have to leave it over for the next day. The Mishnah said, L'fichach ein don in chula, therefore you can't judge Dinin HaFashas on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, let's work that out. My timer, why is that? Mishum de la efsha, because if we do it that way, we won't be able to accomplish it. We won't be able to follow the correct rules of how it's supposed to work with Dinin HaFashas. Hey, Filevin, because let's go through the possibilities. What should we do? L'dayinim b'malei shabsa. Should we say that we're going to judge the person? We're going to bring the case to Beis Din. We're going to hear the edim. We're going to start deliberating on Erev Shabbos. V'ligmir l'dayinim b'malei shabsa, and give the verdict on Erev Shabbos. Hint. Maybe a majority or a super majority of the dayanim are going to find reasons to declare him guilty. And as we just said, we have to leave it over for the next day. So they can't give the verdict on. So if they're gonna exonerate the guy, sure, they could do that on Friday. But if it comes out that if it's gonna end up that they declare him guilty, and we don't know in advance how it's gonna be, then they may end up having to declare him guilty on Shabbos. Well, should we do that? Should we do that? We're gonna judge him on Erev Shabbos and give the verdict on Shabbos. Well, then the problem is. Now, Tosfos points out that by dinim mamonis, you have a gzera midrabanan that you shouldn't judge dinim mamonis on Shabbos, because the chacham are concerned that you might come to write. When you have a din Torah, there's going to be writing involved of the arguments and the verdict and whatever. But here, the
everyone was there to remind one another.
What?
Everyone was in the courtroom to remind one.
Yeah, but that's you still need eventually when it comes to dinim mamonis, you often need to write down a psak din. If nothing else, you may need to write a shtar, you may need to sign of a psak din or whatever. But here, Tosfos points out the sofer adayanim, as we've been learning before, have been writing down everybody's arguments, choiv and schus and everything. So therefore, not necessarily would there be any writing taking place on Shabbos. So fine, they could do that, but the problem is v'liktalei b'shabsa. Would we say that then they execute the person on that same day that the verdict was given? On Shabbos, can't. Ein ritzicha deuches Shabbos. Executing a person is not deuches Shabbos, as the Gemara is going to work out in great detail in the next part of the sugya, how we know that Beis Din cannot execute a person on Shabbos.
That's the day also.
That's not the problem. That's not the point. They could have, if it weren't for that issue, what they could have done is they could do the din Torah, they could bring the person to Beis Din on Erev Shabbos, discuss it all on Erev Shabbos, come back together Shabbos morning, give the verdict, and take him to be executed on Shabbos. But we can't, because as the Gemara is going to point out soon, you can't execute a person on Shabbos. So, should we wait and we're going to execute a Matzah Shabbos? Can't. We just said before, Negad Hashemesh B'inan, that the whole verdict and the Misa has to all take place by day, Negad Hashemesh, in front of the sun. Ligmer l'dinei b'Shabbos. Should we say that we give the final verdict on Shabbos? V'liktalei b'chad b'Shabbos, and we're going to execute him on Sunday. Doesn't work either. Nimtzaat ma'anes dinoi. It comes out then that you're unduly delaying the din,
making him suffer.
Basically, meaning Rashi explains it's one thing until the verdict is given. It's not called inui adin, because he always figures there might be some. They might find some way out. They might find some reason to exonerate him. New edim might show up, etc., etc. But once they've given the verdict. Now, we are going to learn later on the sixth paddock that even after the verdict is given, before he's executed, they have people, they have horsemen and a flag relay and so on and so forth. So that the last moment, if they find some evidence in his favor, then they'll stop the thing. But it's highly unusual for that to happen. Generally speaking, once the verdict is given, we expect that the missa is going to come shortly afterwards. Very, very unlike the way you have, let's say, the Havdil in the American legal system, where a person can be declared guilty and then he sits for 30 years on death row. Anyway, so once the din once the judgment has been given, then already it has to be done as soon as possible. He's already, you actually said, mitzapa, he's already looking forward to, most likely he's going to get executed, and therefore it would be inri adin, it would be delaying the judgment to wait and hold to wait a whole other day. So he can't do that either. Now, the only other possibility, maybe we should say, fine, you know what we'll do? We'll have the Dayanim deliberate on Erev Shabbos, then we'll leave it over until Sunday morning, and Sunday they'll come and they'll give their verdict. Why don't we do that? The problem is, minshu tamayu. The problem is that the Dayanim, during that 2 days, are going between Friday and Sunday, are going to forget the reasons that they gave why to exonerate him, or why to declare him guilty. Ah, you're going to save afagav. Now, we learned before that you have the sefer ha-dayanim, you have the court reporters who are standing over there, the coast of divrei ha-mezaken and divrei ha-mechayven. And they're writing what everybody who said schus, what the reason behind their schus was, as we learned before, because you want to make sure that they're learning from different psukim and all the mechayvin, what they're saying from. So on the face of it, all the dayanim have to do is look at the court transcript, and they'll see. The problem is, nihi de b'pluma kasvin. It's true that the Sofer HaDayanim can write down what the Dayanim said, but liba de inshi inshi, but the heart of a person is inshi. Now, the Gemara is actually kind of using a play on words over here. The word inshi can mean people, but it can also mean forgetting. So the Gemara is kind of saying two expressions in one. Liba de inshi inshi means every person's heart is the person, meaning there's things that a person thinks in his mind and his heart that he can't really express. In terms of chassidus, you have there's malchus, where a person actually expresses verbally what he says, but behind all that, you have all the midas, and you have chochma, bina, and das, and everything, and it's hard to express. You can't always express fully in speech what you're thinking in your mind. So therefore, as much as he may say, and the sofer dayanim are going to write down the words that he said, but the thought process behind them is not something that can be reduced to writing. The other meaning of the Gemara, liba de inshi inshi, what a person was thinking in his heart is very easy to forget. Meaning, in other words, if you're going to have a 2 day break between the original deliberation and the decision, meanwhile he's going to have forgotten the thought process that brought him to this conclusion. So he'll know, fine, he's going to say, I know I concluded such and such, but the underlying basis, the underlying thought process, that he may forget, and having it written down, and having written down the bottom line in front of him is not necessarily going to help him remember that.
It's also shorthanded.
Yeah. So the liba de inshi inshi is kind of a play on words over here. It means a person's mind, a person's heart is the person himself, meaning it's not something that you can transmit to somebody else. And also liba de inshi inshi, what a person thinks in his heart, he can very easily forget. Hilkach loy efshar, so therefore it's not really possible to do it to do it like that, and therefore of necessity we have to have that the deliberations and the verdict are going to be on days back to back. And since, as we said, you can't do since, as we said, you can't do the actual verdict on Shabbos, because then you can't do the execution on Shabbos. Therefore, when we can't leave the verdict over to Sunday, so therefore that brings us to the din of our Mishnah that you can't judge the case to begin with on Erev Shabbos. So what you do is, therefore, you put the person temporarily in a holding cell or something until Sunday, and then you start the case on Sunday. That's not inui adin, because again, like Rashi said, during that stage of things, the defendant is still going to think there's many possibilities for me to get out of this. The more edim will come, they'll find that the edim against me are psulim, they'll be contradicted during the cross examination, etc., etc.
The famous American, I was crazy.
Yeah, well, never mind that. Okay, fine.
Okay.
Now, we mentioned before that ritzicha, that based in executing a person, is not doicha Shabbos. So let's analyze that point. Where do we get that from? So now the Gemara is going to actually start off with a side discussion, which eventually is going to lead back into that. So the Gemara says, I'm going to Rish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. So Rish Lakish begins the discussion by asking Rabbi Yochanan like this. Now, we know there's the concept of mess mitzvah. You find a mess where there's nobody available to bury it. The definition elsewhere the Gemara gives is that you call out and nobody answers, so you know nobody is within earshot. So then you have a mitzvah to bury that mess. So, by the way, Tosfos points out an interesting point. This that we're saying Ein Ritzicha Doiches HaShabbos is that it's not so much that the preparation for the Mitzvahs based in itself involves a Chilul Shabbos. It may not, because it may be considered Mekalkel, but the fact is the Mitzvahs based in has a positive purpose. The purpose of it is to give a kapara for the person. Therefore, that would be so. Therefore, the Melachos that are involved with that on Shabbos, it's not considered Mekalkel, which is also only Dirabbanan. It would actually be also Daraisa. Okay, so Rish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan like this. We know there's a concept of a mess mitzvah, but we also know that if you find a mess mitzvah on Shabbos, you don't bury him on Shabbos. Because that would be, yeah, that would, there were various malachas involved in the burial, digging a hole, for example. But now Rish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan, or to hey, kvuras mess mitzvah deicha Shabbos. Maybe indeed we should argue logically that if you find a mess mitzvah, you should bury him on Shabbos. In fact, the Torah Chaim says the question is not really only on a mess mitzvah. The question really would be on any mess. In the back of the Gemara, the mitzvah Eisan says maybe not necessarily. A regular mess, you could say, you know, fine, it's not such a bizoyan to him to leave the body over for Sunday. But a mess mitzvah, he's lying over there out in the open and nobody's available to bury him. You would think because of bizoyan a mess, maybe you should be allowed to. So, and there's Shlokesh is asking that you should have a logical reason to do that. And the reason to say that would be mikavah choymer. You should be able to say that based on a kavah choymer. Uma avoider shadoicha Shabbos, madach the avoider in the Beis Mikdash, which overrides Shabbos. You have shchita, you have a bunch of other things that are done in the Beis Mikdash on Shabbos, even though those involve malachas, and yet you do them on Shabbos. Nevertheless, kvoras metz mitzvah doicha oisa. Nevertheless, burying a metz mitzvah overrides even the avoider. So if a kohen is on his way to do the avoider and finds a mess mitzvah, then he goes and buries that mess mitzvah, even though it means first, not only is he delaying the avodah, it means he's not going to be able to do the avodah at all because he's going to become tamei. And nevertheless, we do that. And we know that mi v'la achoisei. We know that from the word v'la achoisei and ula achoisei actually in the pasuk. The pasuk describes by nazir. The pasuk says a nazir is not allowed to become tamei mess, al nefesh meis lo yavo. Then the pasuk mentions four relatives. He's not allowed to become Tomei for his father, mother, sister, or brother. Now, once it's said he can't become Tomei Mess, why mention those four relatives? So Rashi brings from the Sifri that we learn something from each one of them. When it says his father, means his father, he can't become Tomei to bury. But a Mess Mitzvah, he could. If a Nazir is walking along and he sees a Mess Mitzvah, then he goes and buries him. He's a Nazir and he's not supposed to become Tomei Mess. That applies to his father, but not to a Mess Mitzvah. From his mother, we learn the concept that that would be even if he's a Nazir and a Kohen, so he has a double level of Kedusha. Nevertheless, he still overrides that to bury the Mess Mitzvah. From the word La'ochiv, we learn not only if he's a regular Kohen, even if a Nazir is a Kohen Gadol, then he also, the same rule applies, he buries a Mess Mitzvah. And now from Ula Achoisei, then we're going to learn another din, as we're going to go on to say now. So what do we learn from Ula from Ula Achoisai? So what do we learn from Ul Achoisai? We learn as follows: Suppose that a person, even we're talking about, let's say, so far it's the same as we said before. He's a Nazir and a Kohen Gadol, and he's going to shecht his Korban Pesach, or he's going to do a mila for his son. So not only does he have that double and triple level of kedusha, being a regular Kohen, and on top of that a Kohen Gadol, and on top of that a Nazir, all of whom are also to be Tomei Lames, and he's on his way to do a very important mitzvah, Korban Pesach or Bris Milah, and the Shomash Mes Lo Mes, and nevertheless he hears that a close relative of his dies, Yochol Yitama, you would think maybe he should be able to become Tomei for him after all. After all, a Kohen becomes Tomei for his relatives. No, Amarta Lo Yitama. So that's why the Pasuk is saying that he doesn't, because a Kohen Gadol doesn't become Tomei for his relatives, and neither does a Nazir. You would think maybe the same thing should apply to a mes mitzvah, that a case like this, where he's a nozir and a kohen gadol, and on his way to bring korban pesach or to do a milah, maybe he shouldn't become tamei for a mes mitzvah. No, talmud lema la'achoisa v'la'achoisa. Therefore, the pasuk says, "and for his sister," meaning la'choisa u'de'en matame al matame la mes mitzvah. So he doesn't become tamei for his sister, but he does become tamei for a mes mitzvah. Even in that case, even when you have all those kedushas piled up on top of one another and mitzvahs piled on top of one another, nevertheless, mes mitzvah overrides that. Tosfos actually points out that we don't have to say like Rashi that we mean he's a Nozir and he's a Kohen Gadol and he's on his way to bring a Korban Pesach, etc. It can mean just the fact that he's going on his way to bring the Korban Pesach itself means that alone, the Pasuk is saying, you would think maybe he should be Metameh for his relatives, and we're saying that no, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach overrides that. However, so you would, in other words, the point is, nevertheless, though, so we are talking, so he's not necessarily a nozir, so he's a nozir. The pasuk saw a regular person would bury his mess and then he'd bring Pesach Sheni. But we're talking about over here, if he's a Kohen or a nozir, and doesn't have to be a Kohen Gadol, then nevertheless, if he's a Kohen Gadol, rather, a Kohen Gadol or a nozir, neither of whom can become Tomei for their relative, so it doesn't have to be both, it's one or the other, and he's going to Shecht his Korban Pesach, then you would think that maybe. Nevertheless, you would think that there's an essa on him not to become Tomei for his relatives. There's an essa to bring a Korban Pesach. Maybe the one essa would override the other, and we're saying that not. He nevertheless goes and brings his Korban Pesach or does the Bris Milah. There's an interesting vort on this that's brought from Rabbi Loza Moshe Horowitz. It's brought in the back of the Gemara, and his in turn his son-in-law was the Torah Tmima, Rabbi Baruch Epstein. He brings the same explanation in Torah Tmima on Chumash. Where do we get from v'la'achoisei that we're from the word u'la'achoisei that we're referring to specifically to Korban Pesach and Bris Milah? He says like this, because those two are the only two essays where there's kores involved. If a person fails to bring a Korban Pesach when he could have, or he fails to have a Bris Milah, then he's Chayav Kores. Every other case of Kores involves a lav. Now, the word ul achoisei is punctuated unusually in the Pasuk. Usually, the word would be vila achoisei, like you have at the beginning of Parshas Emor. Here instead, the nekudas on it are ul achoisei, which we can darshan from that then. The Gemara, in effect, is darshaning that it means l'achoisei meloshen Ichui, Meloshin combining, Meloshin joining back together. So you have a case where a person would have been Chayev Kores for failing to bring the Korban Pesach or do the Bris Milah. So therefore, so in other words, his neshama is going to be cut off from Hashem, Rahman al-Aslan. Then Ul Achoisei, we have two mitzvahs that are meant to reunite, reconnect his neshama with the Eidishter. Nevertheless, the Pasuk is saying, and so the Pasuk is saying, if there's a mess mitzvah involved, that overrides that, but otherwise not. So that's how we learn from the Ula Achoisei that we're referring to a case where a person is on his way to do one of these two mitzvahs. Anyway, the point is that, so Resh Lakish resumes his Kavachomer. So far he was saying like this. So in other words, the Gemara had interjected to explain how we know from Ula Achoisei. Resh Lakish had said that point. For us who are learning the Gemara later on, we need it spelled out what Resh Lakish meant. But so far his Kavachomer went like this. Again, the Avoida in the Beis Hamikdash is Doicha Shabbos, because you do the Avoida even though it involves various Malachas. Nevertheless, even if a person is on his way to do the Avoida, for example, to bring a Korban Pesach, he still overrides that to do a mes mitzvah. So then, by that logic, continues Rish Lakish, Shabbos shenidches mitnei avoda. In that case, then Shabbos, which, as we're saying, is overridden by the avoda, because you do the avoda in the bes mitzvah, even though there's malachas involved, ein adin shetek vos mes mitzvah doicha oisa. How much more so that burying a mes mitzvah should override Shabbos. So therefore, the din should be that you find a mes mitzvah even on Shabbos, then you should be able to bury him on Shabbos. Tosfos actually brings up a point. Wait a minute. When it comes to, we're saying that Shabbos is there's a difference between Shev Val Taseh and Kum Vaseh. When you're saying that, when you say, how is Avoda being overridden by burying a mes mitzvah, is passively. You're not actively not doing the Avoda. You're passively, you're not going and bringing the Korban Pesach, because instead you're busy with the mes mitzvah. How is your Shlokish thinking to learn from that you should be able to actively override Shabbos by doing a malacha of digging a hole and burying the mes mitzvah? So Tosfos says, still fine, Rish Lakish's Kavachomer is still The point is that that avoda is obviously so is a much lesser thing. There's no kodesh or mitzvahs based in or anything involved with that, and yet it overrides Shabbos. So kvuras mes mitzvah should it shouldn't at least a mes mitzvah shouldn't be less than avoda. Anyway, so that's Rish Lakish's question. Amalei, so Rish Yabrechanan answers him, and this is why the sugya comes in over here, because we're going to talk about Mrs. Bastin. Amalei Ritzicha Techiach, so Rish Yabrechanan answers him, you can prove to the contrary from Ritzicha, from Mrs. Bastin. After all, Shadoches Avoida, because Ritzicha, executing a person who's Chayat Misa, is Doicha Avoida in the sense that the Pasuk says regarding a Koyan, Me'im Mizbechi Tikachenu Lomos, that if you have a Koyan who's Chayat Misa, even though he wants to go do the avoda in the Beis Mikdash, we don't let him do that. We bring him to Beis Din. Now, Rashi points out, if he already began an avoda, we don't have him interrupt the avoda. We have him complete the avoda that he's in the middle of. Then we take him from the Mizbeach and bring him to Beis Din. But if he's on his way to do the avoda, we tell him, sorry, we need to bring you to Beis Din to judge you for the case where you're Chayav Misa. And therefore, and you're, even though that means overriding the avoda. Tosfos actually points out that on the face of it, there's a different reason anyway. Once a Kohen has killed somebody, for example, if that's what we're talking about, then he's anyway possible to do the Avoda. We find that a Kohen who killed somebody is possible to do Birkas Kohenim. So Tosfos says, first of all, b'di'evet, if he did do the Avoda at that point, he wouldn't be Mechalalit. Yes, a Kohen who killed somebody should not do the Avoda, but nevertheless, he wouldn't be Mechalalit if he did. Second of all, Tosfos says, no, actually, Mesius Kapayim Duchening is different. You have the Kohen's hands, through his hands, the bracha is coming to the Jewish people. We don't want the very same hands that killed somebody are going to now be used as the vehicle for bracha. It'd be almost like Ein Kateger Nasa Sanedir. But to do other kinds of avoida in the Beis Mikdash, that's not such a problem. Even if he was a Ritzeach. Yeah, by the way, this is brought in Shulchan Aruch. A Kohen who's killed somebody is not allowed to duchen. They talk about nowadays, what if it was an accidental thing? What if, for example, a Kohen was in a car accident, for example, and then killed somebody, Rahman al-Tzlan, is he allowed to duchen? There's a discussion about that. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yochanan tells Rish Lakish, let's look at Ritzicha. So we see that Ritzicha doiches avoida, ve'ena doiches Shabbos. You see that it is doiches avoida. Again, we're saying that if a Kohen is about to do the avoida and he needs to be brought to Beis Din to be judged and executed, then we do that. So we see that Mrs. Beis Din overrides the avoida, ve'ena doiches Shabbos, but Mrs. Beis Din does not override Shabbos. So therefore, so you see, he says to Rish Lakish that your kavah choymer, where you wanted to say, based on avoida and Shabbos and Mes mitzvah is not necessarily valid. Well, that then Rish Lakish asks that itself. Ritzicha gufa tidches Shabbos mekavah chomer. Well, very well. Maybe we should say that Mrs. Beis Din overrides Shabbos. Maybe we should use a similar kavah chomer. Ma avoida shedoches Shabbos. Ma dach avoida overrides Shabbos because you do the avoida even though there's malachas involved. Ritzicha doicha oisa, and yet Ritzicha overrides the avoida. Shenemar, because the pasuk we just said meim mizbechi dekochenu lamus. You take a kohen from the mizbeach to be executed. Meaning, again, he's about to go on to the Mizbeach to do the Avoda, and we nevertheless take him away to Beis Din. Shabbos, Shenidchas, Mifnei Avoda, well then, Shabbos, which is overridden by the Avoda, because you do the Avoda on Shabbos, Ein Adin, Shetei Ritzicha Doi Choysa. Maybe indeed Mrs. Beis Din should override Shabbos. Maybe we should say that Beis Din does execute the person on Shabbos. The answer is we can't. Amar Rava kva poska tana dvei Rabbi Shmuel. Tana dvei Rabbi Shmuel already establishes that it's not so. That Mrs. Beis Din cannot take place on Shabbos. The Tonet Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, when the Pasuk says, Lo Sivaru Esh, the Pasuk says, don't light a fire in your dwelling places on Shabbos. Ma Tamad Leiman. Now, why does the Pasuk need to tell us that? We have 39 malachas. Why is the Pasuk singling out burning a fire? What do you mean, Matam and Leimar? We know why. Ilir Rabbi Yosi l'lav yotzes, Ilir Rabbi Nosson l'chalak yotzes. Because we have two different Tanoim who say there's a reason why the Torah singles out lighting a fire. Rabbi Yosi holds that it's l'lav, and Rabbi Nosson holds it's l'chalak. Kedetanya, as we learn in a Braisa, what does that mean? Havara l'lav yotzes divir Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yosi says Havara is singled out that it's a lav. According to him, all the other 38 malachas a person would be chayav misa for, but Rabbi Yossi learns that this one is only a lav. If a person were to light a fire on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Yossi, he's not chayav kores or skila, he's only over on a lav. So Rabbi Yossi, we have in the Yud Gimel Midas, so sometimes we say that sometimes we say it means that it's in a category of its own. So Rabbi Yossi says this would be an example of that. The Torah singles out lighting a fire, meaning that's different than all the other malachas. Every other malacha, a person gets misa or kares, and here he doesn't. Rav Nosson Omer, L'chalak Yotzah. So Rav Nosson says, no, this is an example of the loy l'lamad al atzma Yotzah, el l'lamad al klal kula Yotzah. So Rav Nosson says, we learn from this that since the Torah is singling out burning, of making a fire, means we learn from that that every malacha is considered a separate thing in terms of a chatos. Meaning, if a person, the Gemara talks about in Shabbos, if a person were to do many malachas on Shabbos, the Hela Mechad, he doesn't know it's Shabbos, so he doesn't know that these are malachas, then he would bring a separate chatos for each one. How do we know that? Why shouldn't we say it's one Shabbos? Because the fact that the Torah singles out burning means that that's an example where he brings a separate chatos, and we learn from that every other malacha is the same thing. So a person were to do, he knows that it's Shabbos. He knows that it's also to do malachas on Shabbos, but he doesn't know that these three things that he did are malachas. He's going to bring a chatas for each one. We learn that. We're saying that we learn from burning to all the other ones. The point is, what does Ritana de Rebbe Shmuel mean? Why does it say Lo Sivar Weish? According to either Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Nosson, we know why it says it. So Omar Rav Tana Meshavis Kashalei. What Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is bothered by, not why it says Lo Sivaru, but why does it say B'chol Meshvei Seichem, in all your dwelling places? Now that we need to know. Ma Tama Loima. Mechti Shabbos Chavis Agufu. After all, Shabbos is not a mitzvah Tluya Ba'aretz. It has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. It's a mitzvah that's on the person himself. Such mitzvahs apply everywhere in the world. So why does it need to say Moshevei Seichem as though it would sound like it applies only in Eretz Yisrael? Tosfos actually points out that elsewhere the Gemara learns something else from this word Moshevei Seichem, but the point is, in other words, it didn't have to say the word at all, but even if it did, it could have said Moshev voice. When it says Moshevei Seichem, means we can learn two different dinim from it, a din that the Gemara learns in Masechta Shabbos about the Bismikdash versus everywhere else, as well as what we're saying over here. So Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Omer Talmud Achor. So one Talmud said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, the reason is like this. Why does the Torah have to say this? So Moshavis, the Kosav Rahman, Lomali, why does the Torah have to say the word Moshavis, which would cause us to mistakenly think that Shabbos applies only in Eretz Yisrael? So Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Omer Talmud Achor. So one Talmud explained the name of Rabbi Shmuel as follows. Lefisha Nehmar, the Pasuk says, Ki yeh be'ish chet mishpat mavas v'humas. The Pasuk says when a person is guilty of something that gets him misspaced in and he's executed. Now you would think from that Pasuk, it means he gets executed no matter what day of the week it is, even Shabbos. What about the Pasuk says that a person is Machalal Shabbos is given Mrs. Bastin? And again, as we said before, all of the Mrs. Bastin themselves involve Malachas. So therefore, so giving him Mrs. Bastin on Shabbos itself would be violating Shabbos. You would think, Chutzmi, Mrs. Bastin, maybe the Torah is saying anybody who does Malacha on Shabbos is Chayiv Misa unless that Malacha is from Mrs. Bastin. On the other hand, on the other hand, you could say the other way around. Maybe the issue of Chilul Shabbos and the Mrs. Bastin for Chilul Shabbos applies even to Mrs. Bastin itself. And then you would say the Pasuk about executing the person applies only on weekdays. So in other words, we can go back and forth over here. On the one hand, we have a Pasuk that says that a person has to be executed, and it doesn't say what day of the week. On the other hand, we have a Pasuk that says you can't be Mechal or Shabbos. So which one takes precedence? So maybe not. Maybe after all, it means that Mrs. Bastin, Vahumas, takes place even on Shabbos. So we wouldn't know one way or the other. We could go back and forth in one way or the other. And again, as Rashi points out, we had the Kavachoymer before from Avoda that we would think to say that it should. That it should take place even on Shabbos. Note, Tamad Loimalai Sivaru Esh Bechomesh Veseichem. The Pasuk says, don't burn a fire, which is one of the four Mrs. Bastin, to heat up lead and pour it down his throat, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta. You can't do that Bechomesh Veseichem in all of your dwellings. Or Lahalan Oemer. Now we have a different Pasuk that also uses the word Mesh Veseichem. It talks about a Ritzeach who has to be executed by Bastin. All of these rules that it says in Parashas Maaseh, how to know the difference between a Ritzeach Beshogig and Amazing, and then it would say, "Amazing, it has to be executed." All of these should be a rule for you, l'dorei seichem, throughout your generations, v'chol mishvei seichem, in all the places that you live. Therefore, we learn from that. Mama Shavasa Amala Halan Bastin. That pasuk obviously is referring to Bastin. A regular person doesn't execute the Ritzayach, only Bastin does. So the Afma Shavasa Amal Khan Bastin. The same way when it says Lysavaru Esh Bachom Shvesechem, the word Meshvesechem refers to Bastin. The Omrachman Lysavaru Esh Bachom Shvesechem. And the pasuk is saying that you don't burn a fire in Meshvesechem. So in other words, that's where we learn from Tonad Veda Bishmal, from that pasuk, that when the pasuk says, it doesn't mean just in your own house, don't burn a fire on Shabbos. There'd be no reason for the pasuk to mention that, because obviously the mitzvahs of Shabbos apply everywhere in the world. Rather, what it means is even in what's elsewhere called Moshvei Seichem, namely your bati dinim, nevertheless, you're not allowed to execute, so you're not allowed to heat up lead for executing or to do any of the other Dalad Mrs. Bastin on Shabbos. So therefore, it's clear from that that we don't do that. Therefore, that breaks apart Rabbi Shmuel. Therefore, when Rish Lakish had tried to defend his Kavach Chomer before about Mes Mitzvah being Doicha Shabbos, then now we can't do that. It's established that Ritzicha is not Doicha Shabbos based on this drasha from Lisavaru Eish. Therefore, now we say that the avoda is that even though ritzicha overrides the avoda, nevertheless and avoda is doicha Shabbos, but ritzicha is not doicha Shabbos, and therefore when Rish Lakish had tried to make a different kal vachomer to say that Shabbos should be that mes mitzvah should be doicha Shabbos, then no, it doesn't work. So ultimately, so we say that in fact burying a mes mitzvah does not override Shabbos, and you can't. You find the mes mitzvah, you wait till after Shabbos to bury him. So the Gemara is going to continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Baz Hashem, that we're going to further analyze. We're going to further analyze this point. Once we've established that Ritzicha is not Doicha Shabbos, then on the face of it, we should have other Kal Vachomers that we could make to contradict certain things that we've said before in this discussion. So we'll continue with dealing with that tomorrow, Baz Hashem.